Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and a warm welcome from both of us to our half-year results presentation. Allow me to introduce James, who succeeded Sean as CFO from the 1st of August. And as one of our shareholders recently commented, it's nice to join as CFO, followed in short order with a significant profit upgrade. Long may this trend continue. As for today's program, James will take you through the numbers, and I will pick up the operations, outlook, and an update on strategy. Before I hand over to James, I want to make a few comments in addition to the highlights on slide three. I said in June that our last financial year was unprecedented. It was, and for very different reasons, the trading environment this half continues to be so. Pleasingly, our response to these challenges has again been exceptional and has enabled us to continue to outperform the market. The experience of our management teams, our supply chain infrastructure, the depth of our inventory holdings, the strength of our balance sheet, and our customer proposition has meant that we have responded better than the competition. And we've been able to maintain our leading service offer, which has meant that we have been the go-to supplier. We have seen some of our competitors struggle, and we've been quick to respond. We remain confident we have a market-winning model and formula. And I will expand upon this later. But in the meantime, I will now hand over to James to take you through the numbers. James?
Thanks, Nick. Morning, everybody. As Nick said, I will start off by running through the results, which, as mentioned, represent a record half year for the group. Throughout the presentation, we will compare to the half year ended 30th of September 2019, rather than the COVID-19 impacted prior year. So, turning to slide 5 in the deck, revenues totaled 200.9 million, up 10.9% on a reported basis and 18.4% higher on a constant currency like-for-like basis against the pre-pandemic 2019 comparative, and with like-for-like meaning H1 2019 has been adjusted from a 27-week to a 26-week period. In turn, reported underlying operating profit at 22 million was 26.4% higher than the 17.4 million achieved in 2019. The reported return on sales for the group was 11% compared to 9.6% in 2019. The finance charges were 1.1 million in the period compared to 1.8 million in 2019. This includes a 0.8 million IFRS 16 finance charge compared to 0.9 million in 2019 and bank interest of 0.3 million lower than 2019's 0.9 million. Underlying PBT of 20.9 million was 34% higher than 2019's 15.6 million. There were no exceptional costs in the year, nor in 2019, so the adjustments to operating profit represent amortization of acquired intangibles and pension scheme expenses. The 2.4 million charge in 2020 represented the COVID-19 related restructuring previously discussed. Acquisition-related costs of 1.9 million compared to 2.2 million in 2019 and is entirely the non-cash acquired intangible asset amortization charge. The non-cash finance charge totaled 0.4 million, representing pension scheme finance costs of 0.2 million, 0.1 million amortization of debt raising costs, and a 0.1 million unwind of discounting on provisions. This compared to a 0.8 million net credit in 2019, which included a financial derivative fair value credit of 1.3 million. And as previously mentioned, we have now adopted cash flow hedge accounting for all future forward foreign exchange contracts, which removes this volatile non-cash item from the income statement. We now account for these movements through other comprehensive income. As mentioned, the non-cash IAS 19 finance charge was 0.2 million, which compared to 0.5 million in 2019, the reduction reflecting the lower pension deficit. Overall, this resulted in an increased reported PBT of 17.7 million compared to 13.3 million in 2019. Now looking at the revenue and underlying operating profit bridges on slide 6. Starting with the top left chart, first half total revenues increased by 19.7 million from 181.2 million in 2019 to 200.9 million. UK revenue was 19.5 million higher on a pro-rated basis, reflecting increased sales across all divisions apart from Johnson Tiles. It is pleasing to record 11.7 million of pro-rated constant currency revenue growth in South Africa, reflecting increased demand and market share gains. Depreciation of the rand reduced constant currency revenue by 5 million compared to 2019. In total, and this is shown in the bottom left-hand chart, group constant currency like-for-like revenue growth was 18.4%. Now looking at the underlying operating profit charts on the right, top right, underlying operating profit was 4.6 million higher than 2019 at 22 million, driven in particular by the UK performance. The weakening of the rand reduced reported underlying operating profit in South Africa by 0.5 million, albeit on a constant currency basis, profits improved by 0.6 million. And looking at the bottom right chart, underlying operating profit in the UK at 17 million was 4.5 million higher than in 2019, with the UK return on sales increasing from 10.8% to 13%. Underlying operating profit in South Africa was 0.1 million higher in the period at 5 million on a reported basis, albeit 0.6 million up on a constant currency basis. The return on sales of 7.1% compared to 7.5% in 2019. Overall, the return on sales for the group was 11% compared to 9.6% in 2019. So moving on to slide number 7, let's look at tax, earnings and the dividend. Regarding tax, the underlying tax charge for the period was 4.4 million and the underlying effective tax rate was 21.1%. Slightly higher than FY21 due to the profit mix and an increase in the effective tax rate in the UK, but in line with 2019. We expect the full year tax rate to be in line with this in the low 20s. Applying the tax charge to underlying PBT of 20.9 million resulted in earnings attributable to shareholders of 16.5 million compared to 12.3 million in 2019. Reported diluted underlying earnings per share was 20 pence and that was a 32.5% increase on 2019's 15.1 pence per share. Turning to the dividend, as a result of the unprecedented impact of COVID-19, the board decided that the preservation of cash needed to be the priority last year and did not therefore propose an interim dividend. In light of the strong trading performance during this half year and the strong financial position and the prospects of the group, the board has decided to declare an interim dividend of 3.1 pence per share in line with 2019. The group continues with its previous progressive, albeit prudent, dividend policy, which takes into account the group's growth strategy, other key stakeholders, future cash flow generation, and earnings growth. Now, looking at the cash flow on slide number 8. As trading has returned to pre-COVID-19 levels, the group has significantly replenished inventory and generated an underlying operating cash flow of $8 million in the period, compared to $20 million in 2019. And this represented a conversion rate of 34% of underlying EBITDA, compared to 97% in 2019. The working capital outflow in the period was $19.3 million, compared to a $3.1 million outflow in 2019, reflecting this substantial increase in inventory. Capital expenditure in the period at $2.5 million reflects a return to the pre-COVID-19 levels and represented circa 1x depreciation. H1 2019 CapEx was $3.1 million. Cash tax paid was $2.9 million, in line with 2019. Interest paid of $1.1 million includes the $0.8 million IFRS 16 lease costs and bank interest of $0.3 million. Overall, net cash outflow in the period was $9.5 million compared to a $6.6 million outflow in 2019 and reflects the payment of the FY21 full year dividend of $6.6 million. So turning to slide 9 and the balance sheet. Net cash was $1 million, and this excludes finance lease liabilities, compared to net debt of $41.1 million at September 19, and this reflects the strong cash generation in the two-year period. Importantly, the balance sheet remains strong and in good shape, and the group continues to have significant liquidity and funding headroom via its banking facility. Net assets increased to $167.3 million, compared to $133.9 million at September 19, with a pension deficit that is reduced to $6.1 million at September 21. So just turning to slide number 10 with more detail on the pensions. The pension scheme position has considerably improved. The IS19 deficit has reduced significantly during the period to $6.1 million from $18.3 million at the year-end in March, driven in large by the strong asset performance in the period. Assets increased by $12.7 million compared to March 21 to $410.5 million, and it is of note that the deficit is the lowest reported since 2011 and represents less than 3% of the group's current market cap. The discount rate remained at 2.05% and assumed inflation increased by 20 basis points to 3.45%. The cash contribution was unchanged in the period at $1.7 million, paid in accordance with the recovery plan agreed in 2019. This is with annual contributions of $3.3 million. And finally, to note, the triennial actuarial valuation dated 31st of March 2021 is now underway, and the company and the trustee continue to work constructively together on this, and we will provide an update on this in due course. Nick, over to you.
Okay, thanks James. If I can ask you to turn to slide 12 please. I want to kick off this section with a summary of where I think the business is and how investors should think about our journey. As you've heard and seen from the numbers, the business is in great shape and it's firing on all cylinders. Not only have we delivered record underlying profits for the first half in absolute terms, but we've also delivered them in margins. Our operating model and our commercial strategy, in my view, has been truly effective. And the strength of our customer proposition and the breadth of our distribution channels has also been key. You will recall in June I said that we had benefited by backing the COVID winners, Screwfix, Toolstation, Amazon, the small format players, as we refer to them. That continues to be true, and we got a fast start out of COVID, because of our exposure and the strength of the relationships here. What we have since benefited from has been our exposure to the other channels, those channels that have opened up since July, the national merchants, the buying groups, and the specialist independent retailers. We've outperformed the market because of the success of our business model and our proposition. And without doubt, there's been a flight to quality. And counterintuitively, the supply chain challenges and the significant cost pressures have actually played to our strengths compared to many of the smaller competitors. We've been able to deal with these challenges better using our scale, financial strength, and our supply chain infrastructure to frankly outperform on both availability and service. And we've also taken advantage from the demise of some long-standing competitors, both here in the UK and to a greater extent in South Africa. We've also been busy growing our acquisition pipeline, and I remain confident that we will add a complementary business to the portfolio in due course. So the way we have managed both the direct and indirect challenges from COVID continues to reinforce our view about the validity of our model and our strategy. And our model and growth strategy remains valid. Before I get into the detail of our performance, I wanted again to take the opportunity to emphasize some of the key strengths of our business, attributes that I believe differentiate us from the competition. If I could ask you to turn to slide 14, this slide is important because it captures what Norcross is all about. The Norcross DNA is what differentiates us from most of our competitors, and these attributes continue to drive our outperformance. Our single product focus by business, our experienced management teams, our supply chains, and our scale have all contributed to our outperformance. Also, our continued commitment to new product, this still very much remains our lifeblood, and is particularly well illustrated on slide 15. Our investment in new product development continues unabated, and again, this is a key differentiator. Slide 15 shows a selection of some of our exciting new products, from the easy-to-install Triton thermostatic shower to the Abode new hot water tap. And we also continue to capitalize on the increasing demand for more hygienic products, such as the Abode Agilis kitchen mixer tap. So investment in new product remains very much at the forefront of our commercial strategy. I mentioned earlier that our supply chain infrastructure has also been an important differentiator. Slide 16. You can see the depth and breadth of our supply chain infrastructure in China. And we've been importing components and sub-assemblies from China for over 20 years, and our expertise here is leading. We have more than 30 people on the ground working with more than 120 suppliers based in several major locations. And our supplier relationships, they're long-standing and well-established, and we've seen very little churn in these last 10 years. Furthermore, we have the benefits of focus with specific offices dedicated to specific products, and we have the benefits of scale and the sharing of intelligence. As such, we have been able to deal with all the supply chain challenges better than our competitors. Turn to slide 17. Another important strength of our business model and our performance has been the growing benefits from increasing collaboration and synergies across the group. Slide 17 provides a few examples of some of these important initiatives. We've built an increasingly important position with Screwfix in the last few years. The very strong Triton relationship has opened the door for listings with our Merlin and Abode businesses. Similarly, the strong Johnson Tiles relationship at Wix has yielded new listings with Merlin and Abode. So the new businesses are accessing the customers from our legacy businesses, and these new listings importantly represent multi-million pound additional revenue and profit streams. In addition, we are leveraging our individual business unit know-how and supply chain expertise across the group. The new ProBoil hot water tap by Abode is another great example of a successful collaboration where we have moved the design and manufacture of the new boiler unit in-house using the Triton know-how and their supply chain. We now have a less expensive boiler, which is also much more effective and more reliable. In terms of our thinking on ESG, please turn to slide 18. The board remains committed to increasing the group's ESG focus and to establish an overarching strategy with appropriate targets. We've appointed the Carbon Trust to work with all our businesses to establish our carbon footprint and help us develop our climate change strategy and to establish meaningful and practical targets. In the meantime, we are progressing many very good environmental initiatives around the group. A good example is our Triton business, which has been leading the pack and has already been awarded the independent Carbon Trust standard in August, having lowered its carbon footprint by some 38%. Our aim is to reduce any negative impact on the environment arising from our operations, and our plan would be to establish meaningful targets as soon as we are ready to do so. In terms of our social and governance credentials, then these are well established and continue to be developed. Clearly, as we know, ESG is an area which we plan to say more about as we develop our approach. So now turning to the specifics of this year's performance, slide 21. The UK performance, our first half performance in the UK was excellent. Revenues in total some 17.5% higher than the 6 months to September 2019. And all our UK businesses, save for Johnson Tiles, continued to grow revenues in quarter two compared to quarter two ending September 2019. And this demonstrates the importance of our broad channel coverage as additional channels were allowed to open. Triton, Merlin and Croydex were the standout performers, and our strong positions with the COVID winners, Screwfix, Toolstation, Victoria Plumbing, Amazon, Plumworld, were important, but also the bounce back in some of our export markets as they reopened. So overall, a continuation of the exceptional performance which we enjoyed in the second half of last year, and again we have undoubtedly continued to win market share. So how did this translate into profitability? Slide 22. Our UK business has recovered strongly, generating record first half absolute levels of profit and record margins. Standout performers were Triton and Merlin, driving the record strong margins to some 13%. Triton and Merlin, as I said at the finals, continue to be our two jewels in the crown and our UK business in aggregate delivered a 36% increase compared to the 6 months September 2019, and indeed all organically driven. Turning to South Africa, slide 24, the drivers of the recovery in South Africa were very similar to the UK, but were more pronounced in the retail renovation market. Total revenue grew by 20% in the half year, and Tile Africa was the star performer, growing revenue by some 34%. So a very resilient performance, further demonstrating the strength of our market position, proposition and operating model. In terms of profitability, slide 25, despite COVID, we still managed to grow the absolute level of profit to 5 million, considerably higher than what was recorded in the 6 months to September 2019. This was truly a resilient performance from a slower market recovery compared to our UK experience. The business was also cash generative in the period, and we have emerged in a stronger financial and relatively stronger competitive position. We continue to believe that the medium-term prospects for our business in South Africa remain very positive and in part reflect our market-leading national footprint. I ask you to turn to slide 26. Our national footprint in South Africa has been a key driver of our success. We are the number two player in the tiles, bathroom and plumbing product segment and number one in the ceramic tile adhesive market. And again, as in the UK, we have definitely benefited from a flight to quality. There's been less government support in South Africa compared to the UK, and more businesses have struggled. And as a result, the market leaders, including ourselves, have gained share. We have also grabbed share following the failure of two of our competitors in the heavy plumbing segment. The Dawn and Inkledon businesses both recently failed, and we responded quickly to pick up a number of their key branches and key sales staff. And this has enabled us to accelerate our branch rollout of our House of Plumbing business. We now have 7 House of Plumbing branches, so we've added 4 post-acquisition. And we see the rollout of the House of Plumbing branch network as sensibly adding to our footprint in South Africa. Turning now to outlook and strategy, slide 28. I appreciate this is very familiar to you. The medium-term outlook is much more robust and certain than it was 12 months ago, particularly in the UK with the continued success of the vaccination program. The UK private new house build sector also remains very robust with increasing house prices, strong demand and shortage of supply. And all of this supports the strong momentum that we have as we enjoy leading positions in this segment. And in South Africa, again, the position is also much improved than 12 months ago, with home planning and dwelling completions on an upward trajectory, combined with an improvement in consumer confidence. COVID transmissions have stabilised and vaccinations increased. In terms of our strategic thinking, slide 29, our strategic vision still holds good. The events of the last 20 months haven't changed our thinking. If anything, since we last updated in June, it's strengthened our conviction that our operating and business model is proving highly effective, and the strategy of broadening and adding to our portfolio with quality leading businesses remains compelling, and we continue to evaluate acquisitions that make strategic sense and meet our criteria. So we remain very optimistic about the growth opportunities in our sectors, in part because of the high degree of fragmentation in our markets. Slide 30. There's been very little change in the last 6 months in our UK market and the sectors in which we operate. The sector remain highly fragmented, and this continues to provide opportunities to not only grow organically, but also to make attractive add-on acquisitions. In terms of our acquisition roadmap and criteria, slide 31, the position hasn't changed because of COVID. We see Norcross as a successful consolidator in a large but fragmented market. We have a very clear view of what type of business we want to acquire. Our game plan hasn't changed, and our pipeline continues to be well developed, and we are active in a number of situations. So, ladies and gentlemen, in concluding today's presentation, if I could ask you to turn to slide 32, I think in summary, this has been another unprecedented 6 months with a set of fresh challenges. Our business again has emerged in great shape, record levels of profit, and our business stronger financially, but also stronger competitively. We continue to win plaudits from some of our most demanding customers on the back of our service and supply, and we've also gained numerous awards for our great products. Our business model and our management teams have responded admirably to every challenge. And as you can see, our balance sheet is in great shape, and we have a very clear, very focused strategic agenda. Our vision and strategy remains valid and relevant. It continues to govern everything we do, and we remain committed to it. And as I said at the finals, the new challenges of COVID have only strengthened that view. So, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's presentation. Thank you very kindly for your patience and attention this morning, and both James and I would be very happy now to take any questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. If you do change your mind, please press star followed by two. When preparing to ask your question, please ensure your line is unmuted. Our first question comes from Peter Ashworth from Shore Capital. Your line is now open. Please proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, team. You spoke to us previously about the seasonality, and lockdown one, I think, occurred with a seasonal time. Is there a seasonality to it, or was the sort of geographic mean there's a more balance to it? I was just trying to remember where we were in that aspect. Thank you.
A difficult one, Peter. I think certainly from the South African perspective, because it was more restrictive lockdown and legislated lockdown, then certainly the South African business, in terms of opening up of our sectors, was slower than the UK. But as you'll have seen from the numbers, the South African momentum between Q1 and Q2 of these last 6 months has been, well maintained. So it's, I think we're, all the channels are open, but I would say both in the UK and indeed in South Africa, the commercial space, as you would expect, and certainly the social housing, is still pretty much subdued, And that's an opportunity for us in both those geographies. Hope that answers your question.
Thank you. Yes, it does. Well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
As another reminder, to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. Our next question comes from Sam Cullen from Peel Hunt. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Hi, morning everyone. Just got some questions on pricing and margin. I think in the statement, you're kind of pretty clear that you're offsetting rising raw material costs and freight cost increases by putting prices up with your customers. Are you offsetting the cash cost of those price increases, or are you kind of taking additional margin? And in that context, I think that 13% margin is probably the highest that I've seen it, certainly. Can you comment on the sustainability of that margin moving forward, particularly with regard to pricing?
I think, Sam, the way I'd answer it is that we're cautiously optimistic about the margins. We're certainly not complacent about it. What I would say is clearly we've had a benefit in these numbers of the very strong performance of our Triton and Merlin businesses in the UK. Pricing generally, I think we're in a position where, because of our proposition, then we've done a good job of recovering the significant increases in input costs, in sea container rates, in raw materials, and indeed in energy. And, you know, those discussions, depending on how the cost framework looks going forward, those discussions will continue. And, you know, you can see from the numbers that we've done a good job of managing, you know, that selling price cost equation in these first 6 months.
Okay, thank you. And the other one I had is, I take your point on the nature of your relative advantage versus the peers as supply chains tightened up. What's the risk that you see that you cede a bit of share back as those challenges abate over the next 6, 12, 18 months? Or do you feel that once you've won customers by demonstrating your strength, you can hold on to them?
Yeah, I think very much so, and which is why, you know, in today's climate, more than any, it's not about price. It's about service, and it's about availability, and it's about the strength of the product offer. Now, you know, we've won, as I mentioned in the presentation, we've won very important listings with our Merlin and Abode businesses in the last 12 months. And, you know, I can't see those listings going anywhere other than developing even further, which is why, you know, I think there's great opportunities for us because, you know, I made the comment that lesser competitors are, quite frankly, you know, still struggling. And, you know, we've seen some casualties in our space in the UK, and I would hypothesize that we're going to see a few more casualties in our space in the next 6 months. So, you know, I think the opportunities are there for us.
Great, thank you.
I think there's some more questions, Maxine, I think.
Our next question comes from Toby Thorington from Edison. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
That's great. Thanks very much. Got a few sort of general questions applying to both divisions, please, on a sort of best guess, indicative basis rather than a specific answer. A question on South African margins and some questions on cash guidance, if I can tee those up that way. Just trying to help out if you can, Nick. I know market stats are a bit vague, but just trying to get a feel for the sort of extent, what you think the extent of the outperformance has been in the UK and South Africa. For both territories, I'd be interested to hear what your stab is as to the sort of price and volume effects. I know you're a multi-headed business. It's not an easy number to get to. Appreciate that. But if you could give us a feel for sort of maybe the price inflation average, we could have a stab at the volume ourselves. And lastly, for this section as well, what would you say on a rolling 12 basis is the sort of vitality index for new products in both regions?
Okay, Toby, thanks for those. I think, in terms of pricing, it is a very complex area, and it will not surprise anybody on this call that we have implemented a series of price increases and surcharges during these 6 months, and again we will be implementing further increases and surcharges in the balance of the year. We would estimate that there's been a price effect of somewhere between 7% and 8% behind these numbers, which would lead you to 10-11% volume, which we believe is outperforming the market, mm-hmm. and particularly so with our standout performers, the Triton business, the Merlin business, the Croydex business, and indeed mm-hmm. in Tile Africa. From memory, our Tile Africa business in value terms, its retail piece, that's grown some 50% plus.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Has to have taken market share, as has the leader in South Africa. So we've got, we have a listed entity that reports numbers, and, that leading player and ourselves have collectively outperformed the market.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's our take on it. Unfortunately, as you well know, the stats on the market are not that reliable, and of course not as up to date as our performance figures.
Yeah. Okay. And the vitality index?
Vitality, I would expect, because of the supply chain issues, that we will be a bit disappointed that we're not in the round about the 20% level, which is in line with our expectations, given the the challenges of the last 20 months. But interestingly, you can see from the presentation, we've got some great products that we're launching. The new handrail from Merlin, the Pro Boiler, the new boiler from Abode, and the hygienic tap. None of those are reflected in these numbers.
I see. Okay. Okay, thank you. Can I move on while I've got the mic, please? You mentioned Tile Africa, standout performer. The other two, I suppose three businesses there were sort of in profit terms same again or slightly lower. I don't know if you feel as though that's a bit disappointing. I heard what you said about the commercial segment. I guess what I'm trying to get at here is if some of that profit stroke margin performance is due to putting cost into the businesses, or whether it's a the absence of the volume uplift that you've seen elsewhere that's behind those margins ex Tile Africa in South Africa.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, Toby, it's the exposure of those businesses to the you know, to the commercial space. Clearly, you know, there's a greater emphasis with Tile Africa on the retail renovation market. So, again, I'm confident over time that the bigger projects, you know, will come back, both in South Africa and indeed the UK. And all our businesses in both geographies are well placed to take advantage of that. You know, Tal is still the leading player in the adhesive market, and one of its strengths is its technical backup and technical service. Likewise, in House of Plumbing, you know, we're taking advantage of the situation. We're investing in the branch network in a market which is at best subdued. But essentially, you know, two competitors have just failed, one of whom I think was established in, I think, 1910. So it just shows the stress that, you know, competitors are having to deal with.
Is it fair to say, Nick, then, that the investment in the hop branches is margin dilutive to begin with? Are those some of the branches
Yes. I mean, you know, we do not expect to, you know, get those branches into profit until at best year two.
Yeah. That's helpful. Thank you. All right. Final clutch questions from me. Can't let James not have a speaking part here. So over to you. A couple of sort of forward-looking questions, please. James, can you give us a feel for what the sort of working capital outlook is for the full year, second half, what the CapEx guidance is as well, please? And I'd also, non-cash questions really, but I'd be interested to know what sort of forward cover the business has in terms of either energy and or transactional foreign exchange costs.
Yeah, sure, Toby. Let me take on the cash question first. I think clearly we've invested significant amounts into stock in the first half. Working capital's been rebuilt. I think guidance for the second half is we'd expect a potential small unwinding of that working capital position in H2, but broadly by full year we would expect it to be broadly in line with where we are today, and that means the cash position at year end would be potentially high single digit millions.
Okay.
Just in terms of CapEx, I think we got down 2.5 million for H1. We'd expect that to significantly increase for H2, and we'd expect full year to be broadly in line with 8 to 10 million for the full year.
Are there any specific projects you'd highlight within that, or are they a roll-up of lots of different ones?
There's a good spread across all the business units, Toby, but I'd call out there's some significant IT upgrades, particularly across Triton and Tile Africa, that we're working on, plus the usual maintenance in the tile plants as well.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
And on the forward cover? Yeah.
Yeah, on the forward cover, yeah, we continue to have significant forward cover on the FX. We have quite a sensible, prudent policy through for the next 9 months, any particular period, and so we're typically majority covered as we go out for the next three quarters. Nick, do you want to take the energy one? Because I know that's something
the,
you've been...
The energy one... I mean, we're pretty much hedged for this financial year, and we've got in excess of 50% for next year. I'd like to have been hedged at more favourable prices, Toby, but you know, we're not into speculation. So you know, our view is that we need to always cover the downside risk. So hopefully that answers your question.
decent visibility in both respects. Thanks. You've cleaned me up question-wise. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Toby.
Thanks, Toby.
Our next question comes from Andy Brown from Equity Development. Your line is now open.
Hi, morning. Hi, Nick. It's been a couple of years since we've had a chat. So just on picking up on a couple of the issues mentioned before, on the price inflation that your selling prices you're putting through, I mean, I know the initial answer to this is going to be yes always, but are you seeing any price resistance yet, or is there resistance coming through that is beginning to concern you yet as far as how much further you could push your prices up?
Morning, Andy. I think there's, you know, there's always resistance, I think, to price increases, but the environment, this is happening on every level, on every product. You know, we're seeing it in every industry. So there's always resistance. But I think, I go back to the point I said before, that availability and service are paramount. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, I do keep up to date with the private house builders and what they're saying. And, you know, they seem to be coping with the, you know, cost input pressures in their business. We have a decent share of their business, and I'm not aware of any significant issues that we're having with our customer base on the acceptance of price increases. Yes, it's always going to be a, you know, negotiation, but I think given the strength of our offer, given the strength of our positions and the brands, then we're confident that we can continue to mitigate those cost pressures through, pricing management.
Okay, no, fair enough. I appreciate it's not a straightforward answer, but at some point that bit of elastic, I guess, has to break somewhere, maybe not in your sector, but somewhere else elsewhere. Second one, just going back to, I think, what Toby was going round in terms of the inventory sort of management and the like. I mean, have you had to change the way you think about the stock that you hold and where you hold it following what we've been through in the last sort of 6 months, 12 months, or is it just that we've been through unprecedented times in the last 6-12 months, we can return to normal? So does the view of stock management and what you need to hold, has that changed?
Well, I think we... You know, I think we have a slightly different view on the importance of local inventory holdings, and quite frankly, the way that we dealt with the, you know, initial impacts of COVID back in, you know, February 20, which started in the China supply chain situation, we dealt with it extremely well there because of our sufficiency of local inventory holdings. And I think, you know, we shouldn't get too preoccupied in terms of taking inventory down because, you know, it's an important differentiator. And we found that in many conversations and in many situations with existing customers and indeed with new customers. So the investment in inventory was a conscious decision that we made and a deliberate one.
Okay, no, fair enough, thank you for that. A final one, just in terms of M&A, I mean, I think you've given us lots of clues, guide there. Just a very general question, value expectations as far as your pipeline is concerned? I mean, clearly markets have recovered quickly. Are they value expectations from potential vendors sensible?
Yeah, I think they are, Andy. They remain sensible. But, I mean, I think decent businesses, which are the ones that we're looking at and screening, come at, you know, sensible and decent valuations. We're you know, we're not going to add to our portfolio with a necessarily a turnaround situation. And we haven't seen any significant movement in valuation aspirations in our sector during the last, you know, 20 months.
Okay, lovely. Cheers, thank you.
Thanks, Andy.
Our final question comes from Tom Frame from Shore Capital. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Morning, Nick. Morning, James. Congratulations on the great set of results. It's just good to see the boiling hot water new product come into the market. I know we've discussed this in the past. We've heard from Strix recently that there's around £300 million wasted on boiling excess water in the UK alone. Presumably this is an annual figure, so good to see you're addressing that problem. And we believe the growth rates are very strong. So just wondering what your view is on the growth potential for this opportunity, for this product. And if there are any differentiators, I think you mentioned in the past price, I think it may be cheaper than for other types of that are out there on the market. I'm not sure if it was £5,000, correct me if I'm wrong. But are there any other differentiators? I mean, in the past we've heard about splashing and, you know, the water being truly boiling as differentiators from other products out there. But what opportunities do you think you have to gain good share of the growing market there?
I think, you know, the hot water tap is an exciting subsector of the tap market, and it's the fastest growing. Please don't hold me to these numbers, but I think it's the hot water tap is round about probably now somewhere between 5 to 10% of the overall tap market, but it's the fastest growing piece of it. So the potential is significant, and clearly there are some major players, and this particular product is like probably fifth or sixth generation for us, and it does reflect the, you know, the benefit of the larger scale group that we've got, because we've used the know-how from Triton and the supply chain in Triton to develop what we believe is, you know, a very, very effective boiling unit. And, you know, we'll be able to launch on the back of that a, I'm going to call it a price-fighting product, which will compete well with some of the better-known market leaders. And we have listings in a number of our customers as we speak. So it's an important aspect of our abode business. It also has pretty strong environmental credentials because, you know, avoiding the use of filtered water in bottles, single-use plastics, and indeed is more energy efficient, we would argue, than, you know, the kettles on the walls. So it has a lot of things going for it. So it's an exciting prospect, early days, but watch this space.
Yeah, excellent. It's definitely an exciting area. I was just wondering, and no worries at all if you don't have them, but is there any approximate growth rates for that market or that product type?
Not that I've seen, Tom, and not that we have access to, but you know, as I mentioned to you, you know, probably 5 or 10 years. I mean, it was from a standing start of zero, and
yeah,
I would estimate it's probably somewhere between, it's probably around about 7% of the overall tap market in the space of, you know, that time frame.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen figures saying that there's about a 15% growth rate for filtered on the point of use, that kind of water market.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Great to see that you're getting some traction there.
Okay. I think that, Maxine, I think that was the last question. So thank you from our perspective to everybody that listened in.